Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Lightning are red hot, having won 8 in a row heading into tonight's game against Edmonton. But Nikita Kucherov, Anthony Cirelli, Steven Stamkos, and Ryan McDonough are all injured. How concerned should Lightning fans be? And Yanni Gourde broke a 35-game goalless streak with the game winner in overtime against Pittsburgh Tuesday. What did he and his teammates have to say about that? We'll discuss it all with Diana Neros, who covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for the Tampa Bay Times. And we'll do a little Bucks and Rays talk as well on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. Hey, you may have heard of Tampa Bay Downs. If you haven't been there for yourself, what's holding you back? Tampa Bay Downs has been a Tampa entertainment landmark since 1926. Okay, Mike Henry joins us now from Tampa Bay Downs. And Mike, another exciting race weekend, of course, but a special weekend as well with the festival preview day. Tell us about that and what you got coming up this week.
Well, hello, Rick. Good to talk to you again. We were a little concerned about the weather going into Saturday because it had been very chilly Friday, and it turned into about as nice a day as you could imagine. I think the temperature might have hit 70, but the sun was out all day. The racing fans in the area responded. We had 5,300 people on, and they wagered 11.5 million, which is the largest ever for a festival preview day or any year that we have had Sam F. Davis Day. A young three-year-old named Sole Volante won the Sam F. Davis Stakes. He upset Independence Hall, and it'll be interesting to see where both of those horses go next on the road to the Kentucky Derby in May. But Sole Volante with the big win. And then Daniel Centeno, the six-time Tampa Bay Downs jockey champion, won two big stakes Saturday, and all credit to him and trainer Arnaud Delacour. So there was a lot of international flavor, as you can tell by these names, and it was just a very exciting day of racing.
And then this Saturday, you have your sprint showcase, right?
We do. We have 2 6-furlong races coming up. The one for the boys is the $100,000 Pelican Stakes, and the favorite will probably be the defending champion, Killy Beggs Captain. He won the race last year under jockey Sammy Camacho, and they're going to be reunited Saturday. The favorite in the $50,000 Minaret Stakes is a nice mare named Ladies Island, who was 8-for-9 last year. She is owned in part by Rich Averill of nearby Bradenton, and she is trained by Gerald Bennett, and she's just an outstanding mare. I am not going to comment on the fact that the male's race is for $100,000 purse and the female's race is for $50,000. I'm going to leave that to somebody else.
Well, it should be exciting. And then Sunday, of course, one of the favorite things you guys do, second time this year, the Kids and Family Day. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we had four. We have four of them scheduled, and we had the first one last Sunday, and it was a huge turnout. It's a lot of games and events for kids, pony rides for the younger kids out in the backyard picnic area, all kind of games, bounce houses, and just a place for families to unwind during the races. And in tandem with that, one of our races will be selected as what we call the Generation Z Special. And the Generation Z Special allows young fans 18 and under to come down after that specific race and get their picture taken in the winner's circle with the jockeys. It's proving very popular, and so we're looking forward to that again Sunday.
And you can call Tampa Bay Downs for more information at 813-855-4401 and check out their website at tampabaydowns.com for more information and 2020 promotions. And make sure to make plans to live it up at the Downs. Before we talk to Diana, the big news, and I mean big news.
Tom Brady has signed?
No.
Oh.
Bigger than that. Much bigger.
Wait. Bigger than Tom Brady signing?
Well, yeah. Because it's more lasting. It's something that the fans have been clamoring for.
Philip Rivers before, is signing.
No.
Teddy Bridgewater?
Even before those guys became potential free agents. I'm telling you, this is transformative. This is earth-shattering. This is for the kids. The Tampa Bay Bucks put out a video, more or less, confirming, without a statement, they will indeed have new uniforms in 2020.
Super Bowl, here they come.
Right.
That's all they needed.
Problem solved. Problem solved.
That's going to cut down the interceptions.
All of it.
It's going to make more tackles.
You know, you're so negative, and so am I, apparently, when I'm getting on Twitter about this. Look, I appreciate the fact that, you know, everybody loves new stuff, right? New gear, mm-hmm. likes change, you know, change for change's sake. I mean, we don't wear the same clothes every day, I guess. And, heck, it's great for merchandise sales when you come up with the new stuff. But I also think we've been a little over the top about this. I'm not a huge fan of the latest, you know, redesign. I always thought, to
be honest
with you.
But you're not a 25-year-old guy either.
Well, that's true. That's true. I'm not, and I don't wear their gear, so there's that too. You know, I'm not like somebody that's wearing this stuff. So, so perhaps if you're a Bucks fan, you're looking for new gear and you're tired of what you've seen. But the uniforms, the on-field uniforms, of course, I'm not a fan of the alarm clock numbers, and I thought they whiffed a little bit. I like the helmets. I thought they did a nice job with that. But anyway, if you've seen the ad, it's some random dude that you never really see pulls up to Raymond James Stadium, hops out of the car, has a little case that he unbuckles or whatever, and proceeds to like take newspapers out with various headlines that would indicate that there's going to be a uniform change and that it might have something to do with, you know, blast from the past, kind of all-time team, all that kind of stuff. And then there's a logo, you know, the current Bucks sort of logo, and he begins to wallpaper this thing with the newspapers and then splash colors. And the colors, the only thing I could tell, rather than pewter, if it is pewter, it looks more like a gray, like a shade, like 50 shades of gray. No, like a shade of gray or silver. More gray than silver, but not pewter. More gray than pewter. So maybe that's the biggest modification. There is orange on his little collage that he's painting. And then, of course, the Buccaneer red. They don't appear to be changing the logo. But who knows? Who knows how radical this will be? But it seems to be a return to maybe their Super Bowl days.
Well, let's hope that forces the play to return to that, too. So.
Right. Well, yeah, if
and,
only.
And look, I kid. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Bucks' current uniforms either.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, there's way too much time and energy focused on the uniforms
for the
from
kids.
Fans. Well, I mean, I'd rather focus on the play on the field.
But unfortunately, I think that, you know, that's what happens is there's nothing exciting going on in the field.
No.
I mean, after 12 years of failure and disappointment, only two winning seasons, people, you know, start looking at other places. They get bored and they start looking around and then they concentrate on not who's in the uniform, but what the uniform looks like. So, but anyway, at least the Glazers are attempting to fix this. Could they not fix the football team next?
Well, new uniforms are coming, I believe the way the NFL system works is that meant they started working on this last offseason.
At least a year, yeah.
It takes at least a year through their process.
That's correct.
I think I read somewhere that the rules were like, you know, essentially by the draft or the new year, the year prior, mm-hmm. you have to indicate your desire for a new uniform. So
that's right.
It's been at least a year in the works if a new one is coming sometime this, yeah. you know, this off season.
And they're going to do a slow rollout and build up the drama. And who knows when they'll actually have guys walk out there and model it. I don't think it'll be a tremendous difference, but it might be. Maybe they'll get rid of pewter. Maybe they'll be more silver or gray or who knows. Look like a lot more like Ohio State or something. I don't know. That would make you happy, I know, being a Michigan guy. But yeah, so that's not. And then the other thing is I have confirmed that Jameis Winston did indeed have LASIK surgery. So there. All your suspicions were true. The Instagram post with the heavy black glasses and all of that that you would get walking out of an eye surgery, well, he's had it. So, you know, just another reason not to get rid of Jameis Winston, because what if all this time it was just his nearsightedness that has contributed to the interception? See, now you have to bring him back. just to find out if it was the eye.
In the press conferences, you should have been holding up a couple fingers and said, how many fingers am I holding up?
Right.
Or brought a seeing eye chart to the press conference. That's what you should have been doing the last few years. Can you read the third line, please?
Well, you know, he's been asked about this every year. Mm-hmm. I mean, because he was a guy who squinted quite a bit. And even at the end of the year, December 30th, I think to be correct, you know, Bruce Arians said, you know, there's nothing wrong with his eye. He goes, look, he can't read the scoreboard, okay? But he can see everything else. So
if you can't read the scoreboard, that's a problem.
It's a big damn scoreboard.
Exactly.
Maybe he doesn't know the down and distance. Maybe he doesn't know the score.
Look, I wear glasses, and I remember many, many years ago, and, you know, your eyesight goes gradually. It's not like you see perfectly one day, and then all of a sudden now you can't see
anything. You don't know it's bad until it's really bad. Yeah.
But I remember being at this is 20 years ago or whatever. I was at a basketball game with my buddy. We're in the upper deck, and there was something on the scoreboard, and I read it off, and he goes, you can read that? I'm like, yeah, why do you think I'm wearing glasses for? You can't? Why don't you get your eyes checked?
That's right, can't you? Yeah.
But, you know, it turns out he ended up getting his eyes checked recently, shortly after that, and he needed, you know, glasses. I think he wore contacts, but, but you know, he couldn't, you know, he didn't realize, my eyesight's not that good. Because you don't realize it.
You don't know what you're missing, as they say in the ads, right? And so, you know, and that happened to me. I was 26 years old. I'd never worn glasses. I thought I had good vision. And then normally I would cover high school games from the field level, so, you know, been a problem. But then I had to go up in a press box one day, and I couldn't read the numbers. I literally didn't know who carried the ball. So I was like, wow, my eyes are really screwed up. I should be able to see this. And then I got glasses, and then it was like, oh, man, they've been bad for a while. There's street signs that I can read now and everything. So it's just you just don't notice it. But Jameis has known he's been nearsighted for a while, and I think he wears glasses, you know, to do in his everyday life. I've certainly seen him with them, but, you know, so now we got that problem solved. So see, we're slowly we still can't have nice things, but we're slowly you know, correcting some of
the. So Jameis will be able to see the new uniforms down the field.
That's exactly right. And if the numbers are big enough, well, they won't even have to be big now. They can just be normal size numbers. We'll have to make him bigger just so he can figure it out. But, yeah, that's what we got. So, all right, Diana Neros joins us now. And, Diana, let's go back just a couple nights ago. We're going to talk about the players who were injured. But I think that made, in some ways, that win in overtime against Pittsburgh so impressive. But let's start with Yanni Gourde because, I mean, here's a guy that everybody knows has been sort of in this goal slump, right? And I don't know how you explain this. Other than it just wasn't going in. But what a time for him to break out of that 35-game goalless streak. And just, boy, the reaction his players had. Just speak to what they were saying after the game.
I think the most incredible moment, other than the actual goal, is Victor Hedman pretty much cutting off Braden Point because he was so excited to get to Gourde and celebrate with Gourde that he, I'm sure, and completely without realizing it, just stepped in front of Point, who's also trying to get to Gourde, to get there first. You know, that just shows how excited they were. And everyone had to touch him. Like, yes, there's always excitement after an overtime goal. But no, usually that's kind of like, I don't know, a little more controlled. Whereas this was just like an epic mob scene of a group hug. And everyone had to get a hand on him. And then if you somehow weren't in that first hug or run that outside of it, then you got a second hug on with him. You know, just everyone wanted to share in that. And it was not about the overtime goal. It was the fact that the overtime goal broke his drought. This is about him breaking his drought as much as it was about the win. And, you know, just that excitement, obviously his excitement, but just how much everyone on the team felt that for him was really special. And just goes to show how valued he is on this team. One of the things that was so interesting about this drought is most players that go through a drought and it's more obvious. It wasn't hard to forget that Yanni Gourde had not scored a goal because he was doing other things. It was not like you were watching him on the ice being like, what are you even doing here? You know, there's some guys, if they stop scoring, they're just not productive, and he's not one of them. So he found other ways to be just as productive. Because he can score goals, he does score goals, but he is not solely a goal scorer. So the forecheck, and the PK and his presence kind of, you know, as an energy boost with that fourth line. That fourth line was setting up opportunities, even if they weren't turning into his goals. So all of that was part of why everyone was so excited for him, that this wasn't somebody who moped through his slump. He was still extremely impactful on this team. And then finally he got through with that goal, and that goal in such a crucial moment just made everything so much bigger and better.
It was a terrific scene. It really came through even on television. You see reactions after game winning goals in overtime, but not like that. As you mentioned, every last guy had to go up to him the way they do, you know, with a goaltender after a game almost. You know, how do you explain? I mean, you've been around sports a long time, and you've seen these things, not just in hockey, but how do you explain a slump like that? It's not as if he's counted on to score, you know, a ton of goals anyway, because as you mentioned, he does so many other things. But is it bad luck? Do people start to just depress? How do you explain something like that?
All of the above. Yeah. There was definitely just some bad luck. There were chances on an empty net that hit the post. There was definitely luck there. But also, he stopped taking chances at some point. The one that sticks out as the most obvious was that Dallas game that's a couple weeks ago now. But he had a good opening, a good look at the net, and he passed to Carter Verhaeghe, who really was kind of past the point of being able to take a shot and didn't have a great chance. You know, that's the glaring example. There were other instances like that where he just started passing the puck more and wasn't taking as many shots. And then the ones he's, you know, it gets in your head. You know, anything you feel like you're not doing well gets in your head. And he said, you know, games 10 through 20 without a goal, it was all he could think about. And then after that, he tried thinking about it less and focusing on all those other parts of his game and just waiting for it. But that doesn't mean you stop thinking about it altogether. And anything that you're focusing on becomes so much harder, right? I mean, again, like beyond sports, that's just how life works. When you're trying so hard to do it right, you think too much. And thinking is the kind of the enemy of the athlete in a way. So it all just becomes so big that the idea of getting a goal and breaking through seems almost far-fetched in a subconscious way. So all of that just kind of kept snowfalling, and all of a sudden you're 35 games without a goal, and everyone's like, wait, how did that happen?
Yeah, it was surprising how long it had been. And, you know, what was great about that game is, and not so great for the Lightning necessarily, but so many guys, you know, they were dropping like flies. I mean, you know, obviously they didn't have Ryan McDonagh, but then you see Anthony Cirelli go down, Nikita Kucherov. Of course, they were without Steven Stamkos. A lot of people logged a lot of minutes, Diana. I mean, just what kind of a gut check was this for this team?
You say a lot of people logged in a lot of minutes. There's no clearer example. During overtime, Mikhail Sergachev, Mitchell Stevens, and Andre Palat got stuck on the ice for 2 minutes. Mm. Now, 2 minutes can be hard to picture what that looks like in real time. Hockey shifts are like 30 seconds to maybe a minute. In overtime, playing 3-on-3, hockey shifts are 30 seconds and under. 2 minutes of a shift is nearly unheard of. And they did this in the second consecutive overtime game. And to say the exhaustion on their faces, even as they're playing this, and they still managed to shut down the Penguins' top two guys. They were playing against Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. This was not, you know, kind of scrub line they're going up against either. And to see how they gutted through it, they were actually the only two guys or the last two guys to congratulate Gord, because they were still on the bench catching their breath when Gord scored that goal. And that's what it took this team to get through that game. You know, guys are playing extra time, down two forwards, down five total guys injured and out either before or during that game. And, you know, second game of the back-to-back, second overtime, they've played a bunch of really physical games in a short period of time, going back to last Thursday when they played the Penguins, and then the Islanders, Columbus, and the Penguins again, all these, like, very physical, gritted-out kind of games. So that was really a, you know, let's see what you got, let's see what you're made of kind of game that they won on Tuesday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, for sure. And look, I mean, Mitchell Stevens is a young player. I thought he did a lot of things. You know, the 200 feet of things, really. This is clearly his best game. I know opportunity presented that, you know, but by the same token, he really delivered. They got to be happy with what they have in him.
Oh, definitely. You're right. That was definitely his best game. He played hard and he played smart. Which are two crucial things when you're down other players. I mean, yeah, those are crucial things all the time, right? But when you're down guys, you playing smart becomes so much more important. I'm going to, again, go back to that overtime shift when all three of them really, you know, they started playing closer to the net once they're getting really tired.
Right,
because
right.
That way you can conserve some of your energy. And sometimes it's just those little things that can go so far in being a smart hockey player. So he you know, he's not a guy who's going to, showed up on that score sheet from Tuesday night, but he stood out for exactly that 200-foot game of, you know, actually it was great that he was playing with Palat in that overtime because that's kind of who he looked like, you know, in shades of Sorelli there, who, you know, those guys who are a little more defensively minded can obviously contribute offensively, but play that role and just kind of clamped down in those times, and he did that so well, Stevens did, on Tuesday.
The guy who never seems like he gets tired, and he's had to pull even more minutes, of course, is Victor Hedman. Still, I think, maybe one of their, if not their most valuable player. We can certainly talk about Kucherov and Stamkos, too. But Hedman is so steady out there, and, you know, I don't know if this catches up to him down the road or not. He seems to do this whenever he's needed every year, right?
He definitely does, and that's actually one of the biggest things that Ryan McDonagh has brought to this team, is taking some of the weight off of Victor Hedman. If you looked at Victor Hedman's minutes with a healthy Ryan McDonagh, not the last few games, compared to before they had McDonagh, his minutes have gone down in a good way because they're able to conserve some of him. Now his minutes are so high in these last few games without McDonagh, or in the stretch before the break without McDonagh, and he does it, and he does it well, and he doesn't seem to tire throughout a game. Obviously, he's human, so he does. But you know, it really is so impressive. He is the guy in so many situations. He's the quarterback on the power play. He plays the PK, and now without McDonagh, he's back to being a primary PKer. And then, of course, 5-on-5, and he's been so good this year. It really is impressive to see him be able to do all of those things all on with that level of success.
All right, this may take us a while to go through all the injuries, so I'm not really sure exactly where to start. Obviously, McDonagh has been out for a while. We still have Steven Stamkos, who missed both games on this this mini road trip. And then, you know, I mean, when you're looking at guys like Anthony Cirelli, what happened to him? Where is Nikita Kucherov's concerns? I mean, just take us through as much as you can as we talk and do this podcast before the Lightning play Edmonton, sort of where these guys are at and how serious they think these are.
So with McDonagh and Jan Ruda being the two oldest injuries, they both were hurt, have been out about a week, and Coach John Cooper said to give it a couple of weeks and then reevaluate. So we're still a little bit out on learning much more about them. Steven Stamkos did not travel to Columbus and Pittsburgh. Cooper was hopeful that he would be available on Thursday, and typically Cooper uses the term hopeful when the guy is pretty much ready to play minus a setback. So it's kind of that, like, yeah, he's going to play, but something could still go wrong, so I'm not going to guarantee anything, is how I interpret hopeful after a year and a half of asking him for injury updates and seeing what happens afterwards.
Right.
So, and then Cirelli took a shot from Malkin, which is exactly how McDonagh was hurt a week ago. Mm-hmm. So, good thing with that, the Lightning don't have to play the Penguins anymore in the regular season, at least, and won't have to block any more of Malkin's shots. Right. But he went out, and those blocked shot injuries are kind of hard to gauge because it might just be a deep bruise and you ice it for a day and you can play. But they also can cause sneaky injuries. I've seen fractures off of block shots that keep guys out for weeks. Actually, that's what happened to Palat last year early in the season. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to say exactly how to expect what to expect from that. It is not expected to be a major injury. And it helps that the Lightning didn't skate on Wednesday, though he probably wouldn't have even if they did, but everyone got a day to recover.
Sure.
So we didn't get an update with them not skating on Wednesday, but initially did not seem to be a long-term issue, but got to kind of say that with some caution because those are so hard to gauge. And then as far as Kucherov goes, interestingly, these are all lower body injuries, and only two of them were sustained in the same way. Just goes to show how many ways you can get hurt in the game of hockey, I guess. But Kucherov, again, not expected to be a long-term thing. He got jammed up along the boards a little bit awkwardly behind the net last night at the end of the second period, or sorry, on Tuesday. And so, again, doesn't look like it's going to be a big thing, but just kind of hard to gauge without having seen what they looked like on Wednesday to know exactly what that means for tonight's game against Edmonton. But probably not something that's long-term if he does miss tonight's game.
Well, look, I mean, I don't know how they can play much better. I mean, they're definitely playing a different style of hockey this year, right? They were winning a lot of games, won the President's Cup a year ago. Hell, may win it again the way they've played and how they're running down Boston. But it's clear, Diana, that this team knows how to protect the lead, is conscious of their defense, is playing the style that you would have to play if you're not relying on the power play. Like, I saw a stat the other day where this streak is very similar to one they had, you know, at least one of the ones they had last year, or where they're at, sort of. And it showed that, you know, they're not allowing as many goals, and they're also not scoring, not relying as much on the power play to score.
Well, right now they can't rely on the power play.
Well, it's not,
goal
it's
last
true.
Night was, on Tuesday night was the first one in nine games.
There's
they
that.
Are,
yeah.
There was another penalty after that, so I believe, I don't have it in front of me, I believe they are now 4 of 45 in 2020.
Okay.
Like this
Point
year,
taken.
Calendar year.
Yeah.
It's not good.
That matters.
But you're right. The fact that they are winning without that. Just because I brought it up, the power play, it's not something specific that's wrong with the power play because every game it's something different. It's a lot to do with how teams are scouting them and how the penalty kills are playing against them and jamming them up in different ways. And they'll make adjustments, I'm sure, and get out of this, I think. And once they do, they'll be even more dangerous. But yes, the fact that they're winning without needing that, to be able to sustain this win streak while your power play is the worst in the league, while you're on that, not the win streak, but this hot run going back to December 23rd when that 10-game streak started, doing that with your power play being miserable is kind of unheard of. So it really is impressive that they've picked up all of the other areas of their game to be able to do that. Because you mentioned that they're right behind Boston, I'm going to make a point that I was wrong. So I wrote in my column, I don't know, maybe a month ago now, that as good as the Lightning were playing and as quickly as they were picking up points, it was going to be very hard to catch Boston. Well, they showed me.
Yep, they ran them down, no doubt.
They ran down the Caps. They ran down Boston. They're right in the thick of it. We could honestly see them on a run for another President's Trophy. Now, if you want to talk about that being a curse or whatnot, we can get to that at a later point.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, this was a team that in October, everyone was afraid had just gone too far trying to fix something and had broken everything. And now we're seeing them right back in the thick of it to be top of the league. Not just, you know, solidly in playoff place or anything else, but they are competing to be at the top of the league once again. So clearly we're seeing some things come together and working. And I think I just answered like five things that weren't even what you asked.
That's good analysis, though, and that's why we talked to you and not have me talk about the Lightning. I did want to have you do this. Break down this game tonight against Edmonton. I mean, no Connor McDavid, of course, much to the chagrin of a lot of people. But nonetheless, a pretty good Edmonton team. So how do you see this one going? And again, not knowing who's available might be a big part of the story, right?
Right. So we don't know exactly who's going to be in the Lightning's lineup, though I guess the past two games have taught us that maybe it doesn't matter. But the Oilers without McDavid are a different Oilers, but Draisaitl is, I think he had 4 points in the first game without McDavid. If I have that right, something, you know, some big number of points, which is what he's done all year. And it's not just, oh, McDavid props him up by any means. Anyone who wants to make that argument, no, incorrect. He is having a great year, totally of his own, and probably looking like the Art Ross scoring trophy goes to him this year. And so that's going to be interesting against the Oilers. What can they do to contain him? They have contained some other sharp shooters. They contained Crosby on Tuesday, for example. But it'll definitely be interesting to see what they can do against Draisaitl tonight.
She's Diana Nielsen. She covers the hottest team in the National Hockey League, the Tampa Bay Lightning, although they're missing some pieces. But she will be there tonight to bring you all the action. Of course, you can read her on TampaBay.com and in the Tampa Bay Times. Thanks, Diana.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, and just a final note here. The Lightning have recalled Alexander Volkov, so that likely means that Nikita Kucherov or Anthony Cirelli will probably be missing from tonight's game against the Oilers. And the Rays pitchers and catchers officially report today. Steve, you see some new rules handed down for baseball this season. To start with, I thought the most interesting or significant one might be that every pitcher that's in the game must face a minimum of three batters.
Yeah, well, three batters or the end of an inning. So if you if there's two outs and you come out and get one batter out and the inning ends, then you can be taken out. But in the middle of an inning, you have to face at least three batters. So you're not going to bring that left-handed specialist in for one batter. Unless obviously they can end the inning if that you know with two outs there, so that's been talked about, but it's now official. 26 man roster now instead of 25. There's a maximum of 13 pitchers you can carry.
Oh wow!
Until September, which then the rosters go to 28, not to 40, and you can carry up to 14 pitchers at that point. So the two way players like Shohei Ohtani or potentially Brendan McKay. You can count as a position player and pitch in games without counting towards that 13-pitcher limit. So it kind of counts on the roster as a hitter instead. So it actually allows you to kind of carry an extra pitcher. But you have to qualify from previous seasons and how many innings you pitch in that. Position players can only pitch if a game goes to extra innings now or if a team is winning or losing by six runs. So you can't use a pit. If you're up five runs in the ninth, you cannot use a position player to pitch. Or down five runs out of that. Doubleheaders, you get a 27th man. Like you had been getting a 26th man for doubleheaders, but because of there's a 26-man roster now, so you get that 27th. Pitchers and two-way players are returning to a 15-day injured list instead, but position players will still have a 10-day IL. And challenge time, managers now have 20 seconds to decide to challenge a play instead of 30.
Wow, okay. Trying to speed up the game, obviously, with these rules and they seem fairly good to me. I don't think it's going to make a dramatic change, except that limit the amount of trips to the mound, and then that presumably will speed up the game with the pitchers having to face three batters or at the end of an inning. So interesting rules. We'll talk more about that as the week goes on. I'm sure the Rays pitchers and catchers, as I mentioned, officially report today. Hey, Matt Baker is going to join us to talk about Sunday's Daytona 500. That will be on tomorrow's podcast, so that's something to look forward to. And folks, if you haven't been out to Tampa Bay Downs, what's keeping you there? I mean, look, this is one of the top Tampa entertainment landmarks all the way going back to 1926. The weather is beautiful. There's something for everyone at Tampa Bay Downs. In addition to the thoroughbred horse racing, they also feature no limits action in the Silks Poker Room. You can work on your golf swing at the Downs Golf Practice Facility, and of course, they got live racing there Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The gates open at 11 a.m. Post time is 12:25, and the excitement is always fast and fun. There's truly something for everyone at Tampa Bay Downs, the premier multi-entertainment destination on Florida's Gulf Coast. You can call Tampa Bay Downs at 813-855-4401 and make sure to make plans to live it up at the Downs. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.